God is really punishing me here.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is season 5, episode 16, In a Lonely Place. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Not Sarah. Adam is back. Hello, Adam Grosser.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here. Before we get into this episode, I want to tell you what's coming up in the Again With This Club. This Friday, April 3rd, it's Again With This 282. Let's watch Nicole Bilderbach in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. We did see her in the season 5 premiere working as a D girl, mistook Dawson for someone important. She will return in later episodes, but we're going to take advantage of that by talking about her episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is season 7, episode 2, Captain Kim. It's on Peacock and also briefly, I think, on Netflix, so you can find it at either of those places. And before that, this Thursday, April 2nd, it's the March edition of Again With Them. We have no idea what bullshit they're going to get up to this month because we're recording this on March 5th. Only one episode dropped off schedule. I guess the two blondes went to Baja Del Mar or something with their kids. So we'll probably hear about that and, you know, maybe one or two episodes about 90210, but we will get through it. Listen to us, never them. That's a special perk for our club members at the $5 level and up, and you can get more information on that and so much more at againwiththispodcast.com/club. All right, just one. It was impossible to separate these storylines, so we're just going to do one A-plot this week again. Almost everyone is flirting with the wrong people. We first see Joey sitting on a pillow at the foot of her bed, squinting and wincing at a movie that has just ended on TV. As the camera comes around it, we see she's with Dawson, who asks what she thinks. She hesitates, but then says it was kind of boring. So at least given that Joey would be slightly more diplomatic with Dawson if that was his movie, we know this isn't Oliver's movie they were watching. That's magically finished. It's the work of someone else, although they don't say who. Dawson lectures Joey about appreciating film, quoting Pauline Kael, and then invites her to see another film his school is screening the next night. Joey asks if her friends are all taking shifts babysitting her post-mugging, but Dawson says they just want to spend time with her. She says it's unnecessary, but Dawson still declares that he'll pick her up for the movie tomorrow at 7, so if she had been hoping to get manicures with Audrey instead of watching Dawson's homework with him, tough shit. She insists she's really fine. He knows, he just wishes she would let him tell her how happy he is that she's okay. And she smiles so hard and then says it's been nice hanging out with him again. I don't think they stopped, including after he told her to her face that being around her hurt him, but okay. Weird.
She meant like doing the whole bedroom movie thing, right? But
maybe
still.
After the credits, it's the next day. Jen and her terrible new flat ironed hair pop up to the attic. Dawson is infuriating me by working on his laptop on a trunk he's using as a coffee table so he can't put his knees under it and his seat is way too low. It hurts my back to be around him at this moment. Jen says there's still time for Dawson to change into one of his cooler t-shirts for tonight. And when he asks where she thinks they're going, she reminds him about the veneer show he agreed to accompany her for. She has to interview the band because no one else at the radio station wanted to. Dawson tells her about the movie he asked Joey to see and how he doesn't want her to be alone. And Jen understands, but wishes sometimes that they had a cleaner slate and is only moderately charmed when Dawson pretends to introduce himself to Jen for the first time. Too bad Jen's not meeting dozens of guys her age for the first time in literally all of her classes and extracurriculars. Oh, well.
Doesn't he have to see this movie for school? Like, I feel like Joey is not the point. The point is he forgot they had plans and it's an obligation.
Right.
Also, Jen is also wearing a t-shirt, so I don't know why she's being shitty about him wearing a t-shirt.
It's true. Jen says she'll go with someone who appreciates rock, and we are first tipped that this might be Audrey when we cut to her as she tidies up her room to a loud track on the stereo. Pacey comes to the door and is about to give her a casual kiss hello, but she swerves him. He reminds her that they both had the day off from work and Joey has classes, so Audrey tells him that what happened the other night has to stay a beautiful memory. Pacey groans and guesses she's annoyed that he didn't call, but she says the sex they had the other night, new information for us, by the way, this is how we find out they didn't just kiss,
Yeah, in his car.
In his car.
We're learning a lot here.
We are. Their sex created a karmic imbalance, and now bad energy is seeking them out because you could take the girl out of Los Angeles, but you can't take the Los Angeles out of the girl, I guess. She explains that while they had sex in Pacey's car, Joey got mugged. Pacey doesn't think it's that serious and squeals in disbelief that Audrey's going on a sex strike over it. She hustles him out so Pacey changes tack. They don't have to have sex. They can just hang out. And she can disperse the bad energy and he can learn how to call in a timely manner. And after taking a long moment to consider it, Audrey says, clip two.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not interested. I can't just hang out with you, Pacey. Not after what happened the other night. Okay, maybe if the sex had been bad.
You thought the sex was good?
Well, yeah, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, thank you.
You're welcome. See, this is exactly why I can't just hang out with you. No, I'm sorry. I am not going to subject myself to some sort of platonic torture test. I'm not that kind of girl.
They're throbbing biological urges.
Yeah, basically. I appreciate that she knows herself. She doesn't trust her parts around Pacey.
Yeah, and I said it before. They are cute. I am into this pairing. I'm into these actors. More of this, less of Joey, please.
Seriously. Unfortunately, that's not happening now because we cut to the hall outside Wilder's office. Joey's sitting on the floor waiting for him, as you would never do in a snowy climate where people are tracking slush everywhere. That floor is filthy. Joey is the same chipper cutie she was the last time Wilder saw her, although I will note she's not wearing the same coat from the night of her mugging. It's like almost to her ankles, this one. Based on how everyone is acting and talking about Joey, it seems like days have passed, but this is apparently the first contact Joey and Wilder have had since she called him from the ATM vestibule. And she's eager to tell him there's a reason that she didn't come back to his place. Clip three.
I'm sure there is, but for God's sakes, don't tell me.
Why not?
Well, you'll ruin the very writerly effect you created when you left. The assignation made but never kept. Doomed love at its finest. It's very Henry James / Edith Wharton. Very Lily Bart. In fact, anyone ever compare you to Lily Bart before, Miss Potter?
Sarah is an Edith Wharton scholar, and somewhere she is screaming.
I feel Sarah would also note it's for God's possessive sake, not whatever this English professor just said. Huge pet peeve.
They go on, Joey answering his question about Lily Bart, clip four.
No. But if I remember correctly, she ends up poverty-stricken alone and pretty much kills herself.
Huh. Okay, bad example. Maybe Fanny Price, perhaps? Or a Jane Eyre, maybe. In any case, that's who you are. You're the girl in the 19th century novel who would perversely refuse to marry for money no matter how much it would raise her station in life. The girl who would say yes, sleep on it, recover her moral principles, and then break the guy's heart the next morning. Which, of course, only increases your appeal. Principles are incredibly sexy, you know.
Look, can I talk now?
Only if you promise not to explain anything.
Well, I can't promise you that.
And I'm afraid we're at an impasse here.
So, that's it? The whole thing is over just like that, just because you say it is?
We haven't covered endings yet, have we? In class. Best ending in all of literature. And don't say Ulysses, because everybody says Ulysses.
You can't be serious.
I think we both know what happened Friday night.
We do.
Yeah. You saved my life that night. My life and possibly my career, neither of which are so impressive that they deserve to be saved, but I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't need to know why you didn't come back that night. I just need to say thank you.
Okay. Jesus Christ.
I hate everything about this, but I hate that this takes any agency away from her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as this entire storyline kind of has. Like, he's still a creep even while he's doing kind of the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate it.
It's also, it's hard to cast your mind back to the time where it was a big deal to phone someone on their cell phone. And, like, I can sort of see that he would feel awkward about calling her to be like, are you okay? Versus
and
now,
yet,
where you would just, like, text someone, hey, what happened? And it wouldn't have to be such a big deal. But, you know, something actually did happen.
It's really weird that neither of them called
the other
at any point. At least 3 days if this happened on Friday, and now it must be Monday if he's in the office at the very least.
Before Joey can say anything back, some lady lets herself in without knocking and then asks if Wilder's done in there. He asks Joey, who says yes, they're done, and she wanders out in a daze while he casually says he'll see her in class. And hours later, after dark, Pacey's in the yard next to Graham's house, throwing pebbles at a window that when Jack comes out, Pacey learns is Jack's, not Jen's. Every B-roll we've seen of this house doesn't show it on the corner, but now it is all of a sudden. So take a note, I guess.
They needed a side to shoot.
They did. So Pacey believes Audrey's in Jen's room pimping before the show they're going to. Jack corrects him that they're primping. And that Pacey needs to talk to Audrey, recapping their conflict earlier. Even Jack knows Pacey fucked up not calling Audrey after they boned. He makes several Robert De Niro faces of disgust in response to this. You can see those are the visual aids. But he also agrees with Pacey that Audrey's bad energy theory is bullshit. And so Pacey asks him then to go and get Audrey, but Jack can't. Clip 5.
They're gone. They're pimped out of here ages ago.
I don't know why that made me laugh. It's so dumb.
It's, I mean, again, everything but Joey. These two are really cute together.
They really are. So Pacey briefly mopes and then asks what Jack is doing tonight. Jack, having learned nothing from recent events, is on his way to a bar that doesn't card. Pacey's in. Jack tries to tell him more, but Pacey says Jack can tell him on the way. Jack just kind of shrugs. And just a reminder, if you enjoyed this scene like I did, an interview with this episode's credited writer, Gina Fattori, is a goal in our membership campaign. So if you and all your friends have not already signed up for the Again With This Club, please do. againwiththispodcast.com/club. Over to the venue, Veneer's set is over and Audrey and Jen are wandering around backstage, lost but excited. Audrey is especially excited to meet the guys and orders Jen to let her have the cute one. Jen thought they were all cute, in Audrey's opinion, but Audrey says everyone's cute on stage, what with the mystique and the music and so on. Jen says this, clip 6.
The music was awful. It was puerile and gimmicky. Okay, just let me have the lead singer, all right?
Okay, fine.
Okay. The accent is really just traveling all over the country this season.
Yeah, was she shooting something at this moment?
I don't know.
I don't understand.
Mm-mm. Jen insists that although Audrey might be there to try to get the Pacey out of her system, no judgment, Jen is there in an entirely professional capacity. And after she interviews the guys, she's going home to Dawson. And no, she's not at all bothered that he's out with Joey tonight, because unlike Audrey, she's capable of having a mature relationship. Cue band guy Steve emerging from the dressing room. Clip 7.
Hey. Hi.
Hey, when did we order 2 beautiful blondes?
Yes, we did. When?
Hi. Hi. I'm Jen from WBCW. This is my friend Audrey. You're Steven?
Steve. Just call me Steve. So, what'd you think of the show?
It was a great set. It was really good. Yeah.
We'll go get our coats.
Okay. Changed my mind. Want the one with the beard.
The guys are Steve and Wynn, W-Y-N-N, just like Steve Wynn, the Las Vegas hotelier. Like, if this is a shout out to that guy, it's really random. And if not, it's even more random. So I don't know. Over to Viz Arts, where Dawson and Joey are discussing his feelings about school. When he says he's settling in, Joey teases that he's getting to be just as pretentious as his classmates. Clip 8.
Godard is not pretentious. He's very funny. How can you not love a movie where the guy's fake name in the passport is Laszlo Kovacs?
Well, it helps if you have no idea who that is.
He's an incredibly famous cinematographer. You used to know this stuff.
Wrong. I only pretended to know stuff like this so that you would be impressed with me.
You're way more of a girl than I ever imagined.
How would you pretend to know that? Like, other than just being like, oh yeah, totally, which that might be fool Dawson because he's very self-involved.
Exactly.
So Joey's trying to roast him back for his love of French cinema when Dawson notices Wilder ahead of them and somehow recognizes him as Joey's prof. They've never had a scene together that I can recall. Dawson and Wilder.
I don't remember.
Oh, no, wait. He went to this house. I'm wrong. They did. He went over to the party at his place where he had a panic attack.
Oh, that party. Yeah, where he had the panic attack. Yeah.
Joey watches as Wilder kisses the woman from his office earlier. Dawson asks if they should go say hello, but Joey declines, squinting at him disgustedly and then trying to shake it off so Dawson won't figure anything out. But she is bad at it, and he clearly makes a mental note of her reaction and her mood. And then we're at the bar. Pacey and Jack banter about whether Pacey should try to find Audrey at the show and whether women just want to be chased to a point short of filing for restraining orders. When they get their beers, Pacey comments that he's not sure Jack should be drinking. He doesn't want Jack to end up in jail after another run-in with his frat brothers. But Jack says they wouldn't come to a place like this. Pacey doesn't know why. Clip 9.
You got cheap beer, late night appetizer menu. The only problem is there's not a lot of women here.
Jack gives him a pointed look.
Jack, this wouldn't happen to be a...
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
That much, huh?
That much.
No, it's funny. It really doesn't seem like it's all that
gay. I know. That's why I like it.
Okay.
I mean...
Come on. With the internalized homophobia.
Jack is totally that guy. And
sure. Yes.
It makes sense.
The only thing I know about the Boston gay bar scene is that there was one called Jacques, because Katya is from Boston and has talked about it on Trixie and Katya's podcast as a place where she used to perform.
I assume it's a location and whatever, but like the design of it is so weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's like sort of tiki-ish.
Mm-hmm.
There are these weird fans. Also, literally every person, every single extra is wearing a coat.
Yeah.
So like, when are we? Where are we? Are you cruising? Why are you completely covered up? Is it mm-hmm. warm in here or not? I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
But I was delighted. I mean, I, of course, saw this coming from the moment Jack was like, oh, I know a place.
Mm-hmm. And, of course.
I am delighted by everything that happens from here mm-hmm. on out to these two.
Same. So before he goes to the bathroom, Jack makes sure Pacey is not weirded out, but Pacey snorts at the idea that he's never been in a gay bar before, and his voice gets real high, so you know it's true. And he adds, clip 10.
You guys are great.
Oh, that's nice. And then he tenses up with dread that as soon as he's unattended, someone's going to hit on him. Speaking of hitting on people, Jen's back at the station while Steve, the veneer guy without the beard, rifles through the records and CDs, finally producing one by Donovan. Jen is confused, but yes, Steve did mean to find the one from the 60s. Steve thinks he's overdue for a major revival. Clip 11.
Not on my radio show, he's not.
I hate it. This is making me insane. After accusing Jen of being a control freak, Steve asks if she has a boyfriend, and in a horny daze, she says that's none of Steve's business. And then a song ends, and we get this, clip 12.
It's over.
When? What?
The song. On the radio, it's over.
Oh!
Yeah.
At the beginning of that clip, you can like just barely hear it, but she's making these little like weird noises with her throat, like and like sort of swaying. So I don't know if we're supposed to think she's super horny or drunk or both. Like, I don't know what's happening with her character right now.
I think super horny, but mm-hmm. also, when are we? When is her show? What is her show? Why is she so bad at all of this?
Right. Yes. She does seem to be on all the time.
Yeah. It's late enough to be after a concert. Last mm-hmm. time it was 8 in the morning. I don't understand.
Well, after the opener, they might have left before the headliners, but still.
Sure, but still. I mean, there's a bar scene happening at the same time, too. So.
True. Anyway, it's not Jen's way to have a song on deck, and tonight is no different, so she has to rush off to fill the dead air. How she still has this job, not sure. And as she belatedly goes to put on another track, we pan over to Audrey flirting with Wynn about his next tour dates. He talks up the Carolinas for no particular reason and then says they'll end up back in Charlottesville, Virginia, where his anthropology PhD girlfriend Kim lives. And Audrey says, that's nice. Wynn guesses she's thinking monogamy sounds boring, and Audrey admits that it doesn't seem very rock and roll, like doesn't he ever want to do anything bad? And he does, but he doesn't do it because he loves his girlfriend. For Audrey, relationships are more complicated than that. Wynn agrees that bad relationships are, which is a great point. But that is what you think when you're young. Back at the gay bar, Jack interrupts Pacey going on to a guy named Jeff about how great the house-made bread is at Civilization, and then excitedly tells Jack, when Jack pulls him aside, that Jeff's a food critic. He's almost talked into covering the restaurant, but Jack has to break the news that Jeff is into him. Pacey says no one could possibly mistake someone as schlubby as he is for a gay guy, which is a very narrow view of the community, in my opinion.
It is. Also, I guess, like, Pacey is schlubby on the inside, but mm-hmm. he does not read as schlubby. And I'll just say it. Pacey is the kind of straight guy who, in college, I absolutely would have been like, are you sure you're not a little jacket? You seem like you might be the tiniest bit. Are you sure?
Oh, your brother's gay. Tell me more.
Right? Yes. He is 100% that guy. And mm-hmm. I buy this. Happening to him all the time, actually.
So Jack doesn't disagree that someone as unstylish as Pacey would be, as Pacey puts it, an insult to gaydom, but says no one would listen to Pacey as intently as Jeff was unless he was waiting to hit on him. Cue the epiphany, clip 13.
Interesting. What? Well, I think for the first time in my life, I understand what it must be like to be a woman. A really hot woman.
Oh, not that hot. I'm not? Not really.
I mean, Jack's doing it more for me than Pacey in this episode, but I will say Joshua Jackson looks better in his craggy late 40s of our
current for sure. Day. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I appreciate Jack taking him down a peg, even though I'm quite confident that in real life, Jack would want to bone Pacey. And they're also dressed identically. So the idea of like, you're not gay. Mm-hmm. Like, no, you both went to the same wardrobe trailer and put on the same sponsored clothing and
pulled all the same pieces for both of you from the same American Eagle. Like, relax.
Yeah.
Jack wants to go back and tell Jeff the bad news, but Pacey would rather play out the string until he can get a commitment on a feature. And if Jeff asks for Pacey's number after that, Pacey will look him straight in the eye and give him Jack's number. But Jack does not consent, and Pacey groans as he goes with Jack to let Jeff down. And back at the radio station, a drunk-sounding Jen is interviewing Wynn and Steve live. They riff a bit about how dumb it is to say that they're on a North American tour since they didn't go to Canada or Mexico. And Jen combatively asks, "Opening sucks, right?" The guys say, "No, not when you're opening for a band as great as North America." North American is the tour, and also they're touring with North America.
This is North America's North American tour? I didn't catch that.
Really amazing. Needlessly confusing. And there is a band called North America now, because I looked it up, but they formed in 2017. So they were not talking about them in this episode.
Weird.
But Jen continues her aggressive line of questioning, like, it must be hard to perform when you know everyone's just waiting for you to leave so the headliner can come out. And Steve says sometimes you win them over and the victory's even sweeter. They probably prejudged and said, no, not for me. Wynn says, then they proceed to rock. Steve says they don't ask for much, and Jen gives him more drunky sex eyes. And at the movie, Dawson points to an aisle, which Joey agrees to when she sees they're within spying distance of Wilder and his date. When Dawson notices that Joey can't stop staring, he checks again that she doesn't want to just go say hi. She thinks it would be embarrassing to interrupt his date. Dawson thinks it would be more embarrassing if Wilder spots Joey later. Joey changes the subject to what the movie's about, and Dawson describes In a Lonely Place, just like the title of this episode. It's a noir, as he likes to pronounce it, in which Humphrey Bogart is a struggling screenwriter who's accused of murder, adding that it's famously ambiguous. Joey snorts that you have to be a film geek to want to see it, then, and Dawson pleasantly says that, or a film geek's friend. And Joey seizes on this, saying that they could be friends, but Dawson's like, your professor and the woman he's kissing? Which is what is happening. And amused, Dawson asks if Joey has a crush on her professor, and Joey denies it, saying it's just weird. Dawson says professors have personal lives and sometimes kiss people. Lots of people. She snits. Dawson can obviously tell he's right, but he doesn't push it, and Joey is saved by the lights going down. After the commercials, we're back at the station. Wynn is trading on his and Audrey's new friendship to make her tell him about the guy she's afraid to admit she's gaga over. When she tells him the basics that we know, Wynn thinks she's making up excuses not to be with this guy, whereupon she asks if he believes in God, and he says, not if you're going to try to convert me, which is a pretty good answer. But it's not that. She tells him about the confluence of her sex with Pacey and Joey's mugging, adding the new detail that Joey left Audrey a message afterward that Audrey only got the next morning because of all the boning. Joey said she was okay and would be staying with a friend, I assume at Grams's, because she has no other friends.
Right, I had the same note. I was like, who? Where?
Yes. Grams found another surprise bedroom under the stairs, so she stayed there. Audrey made a deal with God that if Joey was okay, she would do everything right for a change. Wynn jokes about her not hitting on guys in bands, and Audrey eye rolls that God doesn't want her to be a nun. Wynn figures out that God just wants Audrey to give up this one particular guy. It has to be some kind of a sign, or this whole thing with Pacey is just too easy, and Wynn thinks that's her sign. And then the camera pans over to the booth where Jen and Steve are having a very college freshman conversation. She trusts passion over cleverness and thinks art is supposed to make you feel, while he thinks life is supposed to make you feel and art is supposed to make you feel good. And if you need it to do more, there's probably something wrong in your life. I think she is right, but it's all just time filling until he asks again if she has a boyfriend, because she never answered before. She asks why he wants to know, and he says he's interested in what, she asks idiotically. But when he leans in to try to kiss her, she gets flustered and says she does have a boyfriend, which he doesn't believe since she was being so coy before. But when she insists the truth, her boyfriend's a really nice guy and she wouldn't do anything to hurt him in 100 million years. And Steve's like, all right, and backs off. And then we're back at the bar where I guess Jeff, the professional food critic, is pretending to be a bimbo who doesn't know the ingredients in carbonara to keep Pacey talking until a bored Jack finally is like, now! Pacey regretfully tells Jeff that he is not. Jeff guesses the next word is available, and Pacey agrees. Jeff's not surprised since Pacey and Jack seem like they were very together, and Pacey throws his arm over Jack's shoulder to sell the illusion. Jeff doesn't usually do this, but if they ever break up, and then he hands his card to Jack, and the best part is Pacey kind of flicking his fingers up to take it, and Jeff just like reaching over him to give it to Jack.
Yeah. Also, why if they ever break up? Why wait? Just, you know, they're both here. You're at the bar.
You're setting expectations. Fulfill them.
They're both teenagers, but, you know, he doesn't know that.
Yeah. Right. They're over 18, as far as we know. Pacey doesn't have to be gay to be incensed that Jeff would hit on Jack right in front of the guy he thought was his boyfriend, which was already a joke on Will and Grace months before this with Will and the Woody Harrelson character that Grace was dating at the time. I forget his name. Anyway, Jack seems pretty psyched. And at the movie, every extra who is supposedly watching it is hilariously looking in a different direction. You can see this in the visual aids, how like none of their eye lines are pointing in the same place. When Joey sees Wilder get up and walk along the screen down front, she waits for him to pass and then gets up to follow him. Dawson very judgmentally watching her go. And then in the fucking lobby, we see Wilder gazing at the movie poster for like 10 minutes while Joey slowly makes her way over to him. And he kind of cuts his eyes to the side like he's waiting to hear the footfall that's close enough for him to say without turning around that it's a great title. He might steal it for something, just like the writer of this episode did. Clip 14.
How'd you know it was me?
I saw you when you came in. Should I be jealous?
Are you jealous?
Like Medea.
Okay, he means the one from Greek drama. But it's funnier to pretend he means the one from Boo, a Medea Halloween. But
I mean, they both work.
True. Anyway, there's more. Clip 15.
He's just a friend.
Mine's not.
Not what?
A friend. I mean, she is, but sometimes we go out, we have a few drinks, we go back to my place. She forgets why I'm not right for her.
Why are you telling me this? I'm
trying to get you to hate me.
Well, it's working. So what is the best ending in all of literature? Don't say Ulysses. Everyone says Ulysses.
That's easy. Sentimental Education by Flaubert.
And what happens?
Nothing, really. It's just two old friends sitting around remembering the best thing that never happened to them.
How do you remember something that never happened?
Fondly. You see, Flaubert believed that anticipation was the purest form of pleasure and the most reliable. And that while the things that actually happened to you would invariably disappoint, the things that never happened to you would never dim, never fade. They would always be engraved in your heart with a sort of sweet sadness.
It sounds
deep.
Cowardly.
Well, us academics aren't generally known for...
She kisses him. This is... I'm so glad this is over, because I'm sick of the two of them. Especially yeah. Him, who is a creep, as I keep saying.
Yeah, and somehow this episode where he chooses not to be with her is somehow worse to me, because yeah. He's such a weirdo about it.
It's true.
Why is he standing in the lobby? What? How did he know she'd come out? None of it makes any sense, and
nope.
It just makes him like worse than Dawson in the self-mythologizing department.
Mm-hmm. So when she breaks the clinch, clip 16, she finishes a sentence.
Courage.
Wow.
The only thing I can say about it is he is still selling she's the first girl he's ever kissed in his life. Like, every time they kiss, he just looks absolutely awestruck.
Courage. Goober.
Wow.
Yep. He says God is really punishing him for something he did to a girl when he was 18. Clip 17.
You're not trying to tempt me into reconsidering, are you?
No. We don't know each other very well, do we?
No, we don't.
You have this image of me, this not entirely true image of me.
As a 19th century heroine?
Yeah. And even though that's not true, I'd rather you go on thinking that it is.
I think that can be arranged. I should probably get back. Are we okay here?
We're fine.
In 5 years, you're gonna know everything I know, and more. And I will seem like the biggest dork you ever met. Or maybe I already do.
Yeah, maybe.
No, I know Dawson.
And Oliver, she's met him too.
Oh, true.
So Wilder wanders off. Joey's left alone with her cakey burgundy lipstick, which was the style at the time. Sometime later, Dawson comes out to the lobby with his and Joey's coats to find her pensively sitting alone on a bench. She claims she was about to come back in, but he pleasantly tells her not to bother. He's pretty sure whatever she has going on is more interesting than the movie. I don't know, debatable. So they're wandering home, Joey asking if Dawson ever met someone who saw him but only saw the best. He, of course, says Joey did, but she means someone older who could see the kind of potential you would have if only you weren't you. Like, are you also drunk? And after tonight, Dawson thinks Joey isn't Joey. She kissed the guy who gives her grades. She mildly crabs that he's not being constructive and then tells him about the night she kissed Wilder alone at his house, somewhere she had originally gone to stop whatever was going on, but then made it more complicated, Dawson finishes. She doesn't think her answer to that would be very Joey-like, which don't talk about yourself in the third person, but Dawson thinks they now need to redefine what that means. She says if she hadn't been mugged, she would have gone back there and probably made a fool of herself. Dawson says she lived and took a risk, but now Joey will never actually know what she would have done when it came down to it without stopping time and going backwards, which she wouldn't want to do if she could. Not knowing gives it a sweet sadness. Now you're just repeating what he said. But anyway, Dawson is familiar. Yeah.
I like that Dawson likes this. I don't know that I buy it, but I like if this is where we're going with them as friends, I appreciate that they're trying to get out of the mope.
I agree
and
with that.
And that he can just be like, oh, I'm proud of you for getting out of your comfort zone, even though I don't feel like he would be.
Mm-hmm.
And that she told him at all feels like a huge leap for her as a character.
That is progress for sure. Yeah, I think he's sort of idealized her. And that's why it was so hard for them to get over, not to coin a phrase, the hump of like going from being friends to being in some kind of like romance again. But I agree. If this is where they can stay, that would be better for everyone. But then we see them from behind as they walk toward the Boston skyline and the absolutely enormous fake moon. It's like a third of the height of the shot. It's
yeah,
so big.
I don't think it's even the Boston skyline for real. Maybe
oh, really? Okay.
Maybe the whole thing was green screen. Everything about it looked wrong. Maybe just the moon was drawing my eye like a big pizza pot. Sorry.
back to the gay bar, clip 18.
I never really pegged you as the type of guy who would come into a place like this alone.
Phrasing! Jack says he's not alone, adding that Audrey first brought him there the night Pacey made dinner. Audrey has a way of zeroing in on the thing you're scared of and not letting up. Pacey agrees that's a great quality for a person to have. Jack wonders who does that for her, and Pacey decides it's time for him to peel off. Jack is going to hang, and as soon as Pacey's gone, Jack pulls out Jeff's business card. That's my boy.
Yeah, get it.
And outside the radio station, Audrey hugs Wynn, who annoyingly says the night has been slanted and enchanted. It's the title of a Pavement album for children who don't know, which seems to include Audrey. She thanks Wynn for his advice, and then we cut over to Steve saying goodbye to Jen, presuming that with her boyfriend, it must have been love at first sight. She says, actually, they were friends first. Clip 19.
Friends?
Yeah.
So no passion?
Did I say that?
No, but you did say that you don't trust passion.
Yeah, but just because two people are friends first doesn't mean that they don't have any passion in their relationship.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to insult your relationship. I mean, it's just, I believe in the connection. You know, that gut reaction that says this person, this stranger, is meant to be a part of my life. And I don't know. I guess I just felt that for you tonight.
Yeah, well, that's a really easy thing for you to say, isn't it? Some rock and roll guy who just comes into town for 24 hours and then leaves.
Well, in that case...
And it sort of seems like he's like, well, have a nice life or something, but he's actually just going to the van to get her some merch. Oh, great. Thank you for this garbage I can throw away later. They part on friendly terms, and then Audrey joins Jen, saying this wasn't the night she expected. Jen is sorry she took the single one, but Audrey suspects it's God's way of telling her she's not as single as she thought. And Jen's like, or that is, because as the van pulls away, they see Pacey behind it, leaning on his car like Jake Ryan at the end of 16 Candles. Jen tells Audrey to go make him happy or miserable. Just go. Good advice. Go spend time with Pacey. And after Pacey makes sure Jen doesn't need a ride, Audrey says she has a car, but I'm not sure Jen should be driving given that she has sounded wasted this whole episode. Audrey apologizes to Pacey for overreacting. She just doesn't trust happiness. She says it's like the perfect lawns at the beginning of Blue Velvet. You just know something evil's lurking under them. Not sure I see Audrey as a David Lynch person, but we're almost done.
And
so
you're talking to Pacey, nobody cares. Like, what?
Yeah. Pacey doesn't know that reference either. Yes. Pacey thinks Audrey's real problem is that she's more afraid to have sex with him a second time than she was the first. And his night at the gay bar taught him that he's not going to take no for an answer. But I don't know about that. It's the right lesson. And she also says that's not very PC of him. And he says this isn't either, pulling her in for a kiss. And when they part, Pacey asks what changed Audrey's mind. She met a really hot guy in a band. She says, did she? Then kisses Pacey some more so he can't ask any follow-up questions. Just a sidebar about the guys. Neither of them was cute enough, in my opinion. The beard guy was cuter. The other one looked, like, busted.
Like, sorry, the mugger was way cuter last week than either of these guys. And Jeff in the gay bar also.
True. So then Dawson's in bed reading when Jen comes up and tells him she got him a t-shirt and then climbs onto the bed with him, leaving on her leather jacket, which then creaks so loud through the rest of the scene. She asks about Joey, and Dawson totally breaks her confidence by telling Jen about the affair Joey almost had with Wilder. It made Dawson think about how much they've all changed, and Jen abruptly asks this, clip 20.
Do you think that when two people are in a relationship, that they should be passionate about the same things in order for it to work?
No. Not as long as they're passionate about each other.
And we are. Right?
Greek, Greek.
And passionate about each other.
Greek.
You're not having doubts about us, are you?
No. I'm just tired. I'm just insane.
Is that her mouth, or is there like cheese wrappers wherever
they
are? No,
it's her. She's in a leather jacket, so every time she moves the tiniest bit, it's creaking.
Okay. Creaking.
Creaking. She makes so many dumb faces in the scene, too. You can see in the visual aids. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to rank on her. I know she's a good actor now, but she is not doing her best work in this episode at all.
Yeah, and the writing is not helping, and
the
wardrobe is not helping. I mean, it's just, it's a rough time for Michelle Williams on the show, and I feel bad for her because she's great.
Speaking of feeling bad for people, let's close it up by naming our M and L VPs, starting with our most valuable player. I'm going to say Jeff. Jeff got out of that interaction way ahead of where he started.
Yeah, also possibly responsible for some awakenings. Mm-hmm. So good job, Jeff.
Absolutely. Least valuable player. Wilder, stop being so full of yourself. You're just a dude. This is not special. Next time, Charlie's band books a gig at a biker bar with Joey singing for some reason, and Audrey keeping Pacey the chauffeur from murdering Charlie. Everyone else, therefore, has no excuse to miss Lily's first birthday party back in Capeside, where Dawson finds out Gail has some big news. You will find all kinds of news at againwiththispodcast.com. Use it to find your way to the visual aids we do for every episode, to buy a very special 90210 book co-authored by Sarah and me, and to join our paid subscribers in the Again With This Club. Our membership campaign continues, so the time to sign up yourself, your friends, and everyone in your generational cohort who grew up on the WB is now! Adam, please tell our listeners where they can find you on the internet.
I'm on the internet at Adam807 in various places, and the podcast I co-host is Muppeturgy.
Thank you so much, and thank you for sitting in for all these episodes. You are the best.
Thank you for having me. It was mostly fun.
I'm Tara Ariano, and I'm way more of a girl than you ever imagined. My very special co-host is Adam Grossworth, whom no one has ever compared to Lily Bart, I think. And our producer, David T. Cole, pimped out of here ages ago. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
The only problem is there's not a lot of women here.